On this episode of the Endurance Hour, one-on-one with both Roger Thompson after his 2015 Ironman World Championship race and your 2015 Ironman Louisville winner, age grouper James Burke. The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now. And a big welcome back. Where have you been? Where have we been? The Endurance Hour podcast is back online, and we have a number of shows and interviews and great information for you, quality information that you can use, useful information you can use as an athlete, triathlete, endurance athlete. Moving forward at the end of 2015 and 2016 beyond, I am your host, Dave Erickson. Roger Thompson is with us today in the form of an interview while he was still in Kona just a couple of days after finishing the Ironman World Championship. We talk all about his race day, post-race plans, and then I go one-on-one with age grouper James Burke out of Wisconsin, who won the 2015 Ironman Louisville race. James, if you remember, we spoke with him in March of this year in Arizona. He's a first-year member of the Timex Multisport team and had a phenomenal year the year before, and now he's the winner of a full-distance Ironman, and this was not a pro race. It was a free-for-all, and James was the winner by like 20 minutes. It was incredible. Anyways, just to give you some, I guess, perspective and insight into what we have going on and what has happened since our last episode, episode 140.6. Loved having that as our episode, but it also was our last episode. And it was, I think it was before or after Ironman Coeur d'Alene. It's been that long. So we've been thinking about ways that we can do a reboot of the program, ways to continue with some consistency. And so both Roger and I have not only signed up for Skype, but we've got the necessary equipment so we can be more consistent and meet with each other online versus having to somehow organize our busy lives, our families, our work schedules by getting in person, setting up the video camera and all the audio equipment and doing a video / audio podcast. So from this point forward, and yes, we have like 6 or 7 different episodes lined up in succession for the next 7-8 weeks. We may take a hiatus, a short one right around the holidays, but I don't necessarily think so, not at this pace of what I've been doing a lot of prep work in store for this. So what we're doing with this point moving forward for the podcast, I'm interviewing and speaking with triathlon, cycling, endurance-related coaches on a regular basis. So I'm getting on Skype with them, and I'm doing some video interviews, and I'm also talking with some other professionals who deal with sports science or the overall health of athletes, and one of those is a chiropractor out of Spokane. So anyways, we're going to compile these. These might be shorter episodes overall because, you know, when Roger and I get together, it may end up being an hour or so. We just kind of get going. We're longtime friends. We've got a good chemistry. We just kind of two dudes talking about triathlon or endurance sports in general. So we can just kind of crank them out and just keep on going. Next thing you know, we look at the clock. And it's like, oh my God, it's been over an hour. We better wrap this up. And then we wrap it up. And then, you know, an hour and a half later, we finally actually wrap up the show. But now we're going to be putting together some shorter segments. These could be between 5 and 8 minute individual interviews that will be packed full of specific information, a specific topic. Like, for example, we're going to be talking about biking more efficiently, how bike fitness equals run fitness, fuel versus nutrition. These are upcoming episodes. Race day contingency plans, how common sports related injuries and prevention tips. How does kinesio tape really work? Core strength, balance and flexibility. Planning your first Ironman. Race day travel tips. These are just some of the topics that we'll be covering in the coming weeks. And I've done these interviews with these athletes, and so I'm going to put together these mini segments and then bridge them with, you know, not commentary, but little segues on my part to carry the episode through. So we're going to have some really good stuff for you in your off season if you're wrapping up your 2015 season, help you through your winter training, give you some things that you can really apply to you as an athlete, endurance, runner, cycler, swimming, those kind of things. We even have some stuff about swimming. There's a couple of athletes who I talk with who are coaches that have a great background about mastering open water swimming, swim gear and drills, how to avoid and fix swimmer's shoulder, overuse problems. So these are things that will be in the future. So please, if you've are hearing us for the first time, that's what we have in store. If you're coming back to us or you're stumbling upon this, like, what the hell? This is in my iTunes lineup. This is a new episode. Where'd this come from? Now you know. It's going to be great. Thank you for listening. Of course, we're on Facebook, so we're going to be posting some things there. You can go to endurancehour.com. That's where you'll see some of the summaries of what the episodes are. So if you happen to want to listen to us online that way, but I prefer basically downloading it on my phone and listening to it on the go. I know a lot of you do that, whether you're on your runs or rides, put in the headphones and go for your workouts. So we're still going to be that kind of resource for you. So today is two special one-on-one interviews, kind of kick things back off with both Roger. He was in Kona. He stayed in Kona for a few extra days after the race, went there beforehand, him and his wife, Jessie, and then I called him up and we did a Skype interview. I think it's 2 days afterwards, so that's what you're going to hear first. And then I'm going to speak with James Burke. This was actually probably Monday after his race on Sunday. And when I talked to him, I think I found this out after the fact, not while I was recording, but maybe a different time. He said he had just done a TV interview that morning for one of the TV stations. I mean, he's becoming a celebrity, but he's such a mellow, relaxed, easygoing guy, regular guy. This is the guy you would just bump shoulders into in the coffee line at Starbucks. You wouldn't, unassuming, completely. James Burke's a real guy, and he has a future if he wants it. I don't know if he wants to go pro, but he definitely could. So let's go ahead and kick off our first interview with Roger. This is about 13 minutes long, so plan your intervals or your bike segment for that. 13 minutes with Roger, and then it's about 20 minutes with James. So here we go. My little quick talk with Roger while he was in Kona, and I was in dreary Spokane, Washington. Congratulations. This is Ironman World Championship race number 4 or 5 for you?
5.
Yeah. 5. And, gosh, tell me about the race week.
You know, I came in a little early. I came in on Tuesday, and Jessie actually came in on Thursday, my wife, which was awesome. So it allowed me to kind of get things kind of settled and set up. However, I didn't realize when I got here how much I hate being in here all by myself. I'm used to having either you here or Jessie here or somebody here. So I kind of moped around by myself and felt sorry for myself. And anyway, it was kind of funny. But I got things settled and was able to go to Castelli Breakfast, one of our fine clothing sponsors. Went to down to the Parade of Nations. That was kind of fun. Kind of didn't do much with that. The expo. Dropped my bike off with Chris Davidson, our mechanic, who dialed things in for me, which was amazing. What a true gift. Talk about when you go and check your bike in to know that it's been looked over and is in as fine a shape as it can be. And so that was great. What else did I do that week? I'm trying to think of other things that I did. Not a lot. I went for a swim a couple times. Saw Ryan from Blue 70 out on the coffee boat. That was a lot of fun. Drank a little bit of coffee out there. It was scalding hot. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. You know, did all the pre-race, you know, stuff that's fun to do. The underpants run. I know there's photos of me circulating out there in my Blue 70 shorts there that were pretty awesome pink. They're beautiful. We went to Mike's teammates' house and during his birthday and had a phenomenal dinner up there. That pre-race week was just packed with activities, but not so much that you just felt overwhelmed and tired and you're being run a little lean.
What was your mindset going into this year's race compared to years past?
I don't know if you heard Jessie laugh, but you know, I think every year, and you hear me say this, Dave, often off the podcast, is just I just feel underprepared, and I think we all feel that way to some extent before just about every race. And I also know that going in underprepared for an event often is much better than going overprepared physically and emotionally. But I don't know why this year, you know, I wasn't it wasn't like I was burned out and I didn't want to race, but emotionally I was, I had probably more nerves for this race. No reason but my own. No one said I had to do anything, but I almost was to the point where I just wanted to go home. I didn't want to be here. And I just had to get through that, by myself. And then when Jessie arrived, she talked me off the cliff a couple times, but no, it's just something that we all go through to some extent. And I think we go through that, you know, at any race, you know, the start of the race, we think, oh, I don't want to do this. Hope they cancel it. And, but you know, once you start that first 100 meters of the swim, you're ready to roll, or you're in the mix of it all and you're ready to roll. So, it just is, I think, what makes us human. I think we're, fearful of not, achieving what we in our mind want to do and kind of letting ourselves down. And at least that's for me. And, cause I'm reassured time and time again that, you know, you're here, just get that t-shirt, you know, so that for me was tough, but, we eventually got to the start and I was pretty excited. I was ready to roll and had a good race plan going in. So yeah, my mindset going in, I just felt the preparation was a little rough and emotionally I was just probably a little over the edge than I normally am coming in here.
Did you feel like it was a celebration race? Because it was the end of the season, or it was more like, I got to go through the motions. I made it here. I better appreciate and respect what I'm about to do.
I think that might be the second part. Is I have a great deal of respect for this distance period, no matter where it's at. And I think people that don't are the ones that get humbled awfully quickly the first time. So when I come here, I think that's the big, is the fear, is truly the fear or the respect that you have for it, knowing that you could be the best fit person in the world and end up, you know, not coming in on the bike or walking the run or whatever. So it's you know, you're going into kind of an unknown, and you have all these, you have your tools, and which is your fitness, and you have your experience, which hopefully in the form of knowledge now. And now it's about being able to get out there and drawing from this toolbox all the things that it needs at certain times, and not neglecting things and getting caught up in the heat of the moment or the passion or the competitiveness of just knowing that it's like you don't need to be competitive the entire race, because often that causes you to lose sight of, you know, yourself and what you need to be doing. So for me, it's always nerve-wracking. I don't think I've ever gone into an Ironman. I guess this is my 15th one that I go, I got this. This is nothing. You know, I know everyone tells you that, but it's just like, you never show up to one of these races and have any guarantees.
Did you surprise yourself from your results? Because I know they weren't too far off from last year based on your swim, maybe a minute slower, your bike, maybe a minute slower, run. I know it's the run's always that variable, but are you happy with how you performed?
You know, of all the times I've raced here, this wasn't my fastest time here, but I will say that it was probably the race that I was most proud of here in terms of not just in the overall picture, but more along the lines of the race itself. I went into it, I threw out some numbers that I was shooting for, and the swim, I just wanted to swim really comfortably. And when I mean comfortably, I mean really comfortably. I was breathing very, very comfortably, getting bounced around, but I didn't care. I'm just like, I'm just going to get through the swim and I'm going to enjoy it, which I did. And I came out just under an hour and I was just shocked. I'm like, I felt like I was swimming like a 110 or something. And so it felt great. Got through transition, which took me a lot longer because I put on my Skins calf sleeves and the Castelli Stealth top, and as well as some arm coolers. And when you're putting that stuff on when you're wet is very difficult to do. Obviously in Coeur d'Alene, we had that on under our wetsuits already. So, you know, you just grab and go. So took a little longer, but out on the bike, I was feeling great. I just wanted to ride again conservatively for most of it, but I hit about mile 40, 45, 50 right in there. And I was just looking at my power and my heart rate, and none of it was right. It was just, my heart rate was low. My heart rate was not doing what it should be doing, and I just thought something's going south, something's not right. And I got out to Javi finally, and I'm just like, I got to switch what I'm doing, which I had my special needs, which I just reload up my bottles, and I just decided I'm going to go to gels. And by the time I got to Kauai High coming back in, so about whatever 30 miles back, 35 miles back in, all of a sudden those gels started kicking in, and all of a sudden I started feeling so much, I mean, just like night and day. And it just started ramping up, and I was just catching people left and right. I was actually getting almost giddy. I was excited about how well I was riding into the headwind. I mean, it was blowing tough, but I'm looking at my heart rate now. It's too high now, and my power was too high, but I just felt like I was coming back, which was dumb. And even when I was doing it, I was saying, this is dumb. This, what are you doing? You need to slow down. But I honestly thought I needed to catch up where I should have been. But anyway, but yeah, I was racing about at a half iron effort at that point. So I decided with about 10 miles ago, I should probably throttle it back, but the winds were really stiff coming back in from Kwai Hai. They got stiffer and stiffer as you got closer to Kona. And, so I tried to slow down a little bit, stay on top of hydration, staying cool and eating, and then got on the run and, had pretty normal transition, switched some socks and got out on the run and ran my first few miles really fairly comfortably, and then, but it just didn't feel good. The whole time on the run, I'm just getting one foot in front of the other, you know, I knew I put out too much on the bike from Kwai Hai back, and so I just thought, I'm going to keep it down. It's painful, it's too hard, I'm running, so it's just like, I'm in control, just slow down a little bit then, that's pretty easy. Which I did, and you know, got through the aid stations, and pretty much the whole run, you know, it was tough, but I never felt like I blew up. There was a point that I walked for a little bit. I'm just like, I need to kind of reset, recalibrate here, and then I just got going again. And even coming back, I still was kind of picking up some pace here and there, kind of surging a little bit here unintentionally, just more along the lines of like, I can run faster, but knowing I needed to hold the cards a little close to the chest as we still got a ways to go and come out of the energy lab. Of course, energy lab's miserable. But yeah, I mean, and so that's what I was probably most proud of is taking those moments and evaluating them and adjusting and getting the hydration and the fueling I needed. And I went to Coke really early. I wouldn't recommend it personally, but I think I went to Coke probably at mile, I want to say, 13, so halfway through I went to Coke, and I was worried about that, but I made it through. I didn't really have any GI problems or anything either, so that was nice. And and somehow all I wanted to do was get to mile 24. I know it's 26.2, but I wanted to get to 24, get up Mark and Dave Hill, and it gets you to come down Palani, then Kuakini, and then by the time you're at the top of Palani, it's just pretty much you're running home on emotion. You're going down Palani, which is like a, I don't know, what is that, about an 8% grade? And then you take the left onto Kuakini, which is flat and kind of gradual. And then you take a right and you're down onto Ali'i Drive. And the crowd takes you pretty much all the way to the finish at that point. So, there's the whole race. So I got down and I was still running fast and passing a few people. Along the, on Ali'i Drive. And then there were three guys ahead of me, which is hilarious, here in a second. But I didn't want to pass them because I didn't want to cross the finish line with a bunch of people. You know, I wanted just to be by myself, and there was no one behind me because I passed people a bit ago. So I thought, I'll let these guys go ahead of me and I won't pass them in the chute. Even though I, you know, could have, but I didn't want to be that guy. Kind of looks silly. And lo and behold, I get this email later from Russ Abrams, a friend of ours, who says, do you realize that, you know, there were 9 people within a minute and a half of you, you know, in your age group. And 3 of them, of course, were right in front of me, which I chose not to pass. And then there was a few others. But I thought it was kind of funny. But again, what's the difference? I think I was, 38th maybe in my age group. And, you know, let's say I passed 9 people, you know, it puts me into, you know, I don't go up that much, you know, I'm not in the top 10. But in terms of looking at numbers of prior years and so forth, it definitely showed that this race was quite similar to the races I did last year, which I consider last year a great race in terms of a result. And this year it was just hotter. It was tough conditions this year. I know it's Hawaii, it's always hot, but it was hot. It was really hot.
And you had a nice little fist pump there crossing the finish line, we saw on the live feed.
Yeah, I was, So I was just happy to get through that, especially starting the run when I feel like I overbiked and just going, now I got to run. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I had visions of glow sticks. I had visions of just starting to, when should I start walking, you know, the rest of the way. And somehow I just kept at it. So I had great support out there. Lots of people out there cheering. And it was great to have Jet. She was everywhere essentially that she could be, which was cool. And Allie and Tyler Stitt were out there as well. And obviously Tristan and all the great Timex people. So, yeah, it was pretty fun.
Well, congratulations for your, I'm sorry, you said fifth?
Fifth time here in Kona,
And 15th career Ironman finish.
Right, yeah. They're adding up.
You're not a spring chicken anymore.
I know. Jeez, trust me, when I'm down here, you realize just how fast people go. So.
Great stuff, as always, with Roger. And as I mentioned in the intro of the program, Roger and I both have Skype, both at home, and we're working on it. I have a microphone, and Roger has, I think, a microphone. So we're going to try to work on producing future episodes together as co-hosts through Skype and have good audio quality for you, and then we can have some individual segments. By the way, and I've done this with some other athletes, if you have a question that you want specifically answered, this is what I want you to do. Use the hashtag Ask Endurance Hour. Use that hashtag on Twitter or Facebook, and I can find it. I can do a little search for it. It's a really easy technique you can do on social media. I just type in those search words, hashtag Ask Endurance Hour, and then we can pull those questions, and then like Roger and I can answer them, or if they're somewhat coaching specific, you know, and then Roger's not available, I can ask one of my other coaches to answer that question too. So use the hashtag Ask Endurance Hour, and then we can answer those questions on upcoming episodes. All right, time now for my one-on-one with your age group overall winner at Ironman Louisville 2015, James Burke. It is so good to be talking to a fellow teammate with Timex who's also the new Ironman Louisville overall champion, an Ironman champion. James, has it sunk in? Are you feeling it?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal. It's pretty surreal. I didn't know what was going to happen when I went down to the race. And, you know, even when you're in the race and you're racing and you're suffering and you're dealing with, you know, everything that everyone deals with in their own Ironman, it wasn't probably until the last maybe half mile where it really started to sink in. And when I got across the line, it was like the previous 8 hours and 47 minutes didn't matter because I felt great. It was awesome. It was a really neat experience. Really surreal.
Did you take your time coming down that chute with that huge crowd there in Louisville?
I did. In fact, the announcer was saying that he thought it might have cost me $8.50 because I was taking so much time. But I had a couple friends down there that I wanted to make sure I had time to spot. My family didn't come down for this race because of, our kids are at school. So, I was able to find them, and then, I walked across the line.
I saw some videos on Facebook. Maybe it was it Bruce who you went back and said hi to, or someone posted a video that you were about to go and then you turned around and gave them a hug or shook their hand.
Yeah, that was my neighbor. So okay. My neighbor came down, an interesting story about him. He had never done an Ironman before meeting me a year ago and ended up doing Augusta 70.3 as his first triathlon a month ago. So I went down to watch him do Augusta, and he came down to watch me do Louisville. So it's pretty cool. I wanted to meet him.
Where does this victory rank for you as a triathlete?
Easily the biggest win. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've crossed the finish line and broken the tape. So you know that was just a unique experience unto itself. I've had some good Olympic distance races that you know I was pretty proud of, and quite honestly, I've had some good Ironman races too. But the finish line, the atmosphere, I mean, it was all very, very surreal. Very surreal.
Yeah. Just to recap some of your times, just as a reminder, 46:47 for the swim. I know it was a down current swim in Louisville, right?
Yep, correct.
That was probably a PR?
Yeah, yeah. My next fastest time would have been about 51 that I did in Ironman, Wisconsin. So, yeah, definitely about a 5-minute advantage going downstream.
Where did you position yourself in that swim? Because that had a unique start where people are jumping into the water at different piers.
Yeah, it was a rolling start. It was the first race I've ever experienced with a rolling start. The two other Ironmans I've done have always been mass starts. In hindsight, I wish I would have gotten there way earlier. I ended up getting in line an hour before the start, which put me about two thirds of the way back. And the start or the race began at 7:30. I ended up getting in the water at about 8. So they took us down the dock, and there was two docks where the athletes were getting in. And there was really no rhyme or reason as to which dock you went off of. But starting that far in the back made for somewhat of a congested first part of the swim, because you go up inside of a little harbor for about two thirds, and then you turn around and you come back downstream. So the first part was pretty congested, probably typical of a mass start, to be quite honest with you.
Do you prefer chasing, or would you rather be in the lead on the swim?
I'm usually out towards the front of the swim, so I usually don't have to deal with a lot of thrashing and, you know, a lot of the trepidation that a lot of the other triathletes deal with. So I guess I prefer, you know, clean water. But then again, you know, you probably control your speed a little bit better by not having open fresh water to push it a little too hard. So I felt I had a really good pace. You could definitely notice the current a little bit. So once we made the two thirds around, it was between the wetsuit keeping you buoyant and the current kind of carrying you, you could definitely tell that you were moving.
And you moved up quite a bit, because it has you coming out of the water third overall.
Yeah. So I was, you know, all day, because I started so far back, I didn't realize I had 20 minutes on the overall victory, just because I wasn't sure when anyone else had started. Mm-hmm. So I had an idea that I was more towards the front, because I had a couple friends that were down there giving me some splits, but I ended up running kind of shoulder to shoulder with the second place guy, because he had started, he must have started 18 minutes before I did. So mm-hmm. I was kind of chasing all day, which maybe probably helped, to be quite honest with you.
That's interesting. You chased all day, but you ended up chasing so hard that you became the first to cross the line, right?
Right. Yeah. And not to jump ahead, but interestingly, I had caught the first runner by about mile 12, led from mile 12 to 20. The second place finisher actually caught me at mile 20. And I just kept thinking about the Chattanooga finish with the pros and thinking, oh man, I really don't want to be sprinting down the chute. So I put in a pretty big effort, mile 20 to about mile 24, and ended up getting some time on him, which was nice, because then I was able to do a finishing shoot.
Tell me about your bike. Your bike splits were very impressive, and the first half of it, you were averaging, in the 23, 24, possibly 25 range.
Yeah, I went into this race really wanting to push the bike. The last two races, full Ironmans I did, I biked a little more conservatively than probably what I thought I could do. So one of my goals was to push the bike. The bike course is pretty hilly. Good road conditions and really beautiful, very scenic, but kind of rolling hills, nothing major or too steep, but not a ton of flats. So I ended up biking the first 60 miles really strong, held good power, kind of kept it in check up the hills. From mile 60 to 80, it was the second loop, and so the second loop got a little congested with a lot of the triathletes doing the first loop, plus there was a fair amount of vehicle traffic out on the road. But managed to get through that feeling pretty solid. And then from mile 80 in, it's about 30 miles back into town, there was a little bit of a headwind, and I'd say the last 20, I really kind of struggled. So that was probably the one part of the race that I really was hurting, was the last 20 to 30 miles of the bike.
Was anything going through your head as though I've spent too much on the bike to where my legs aren't going to respond?
Yeah, I two things. One, I had a good nutrition plan going into the race, and like all good nutrition plans and like a lot of Ironmans, they kind of go out the window once you get in it. I fueled very well the first part, and then my stomach started to shut down a little bit on the bike, and I knew that, you know, with a marathon up ahead, you know, that was going to spell trouble. I tried to stay calm, tried to stay relaxed. When I got into transition on my T2, I took more time than I usually do, and I ended up getting into the tent. I sat down, I collected my thoughts. It was probably one of the slower transition times, probably of the top guys going through. I ended up coming in third, but leaving fifth. So there were two guys that got into transition after me, and I think that really helped, because then it kind of set. I kind of calmed myself down and got my thoughts and executed a pretty solid run.
So you ended up doing a 4:53.05, averaging just under 23 miles per hour. Is that about what your training told you might be able to do?
Yeah, I went in wanting to average about 23.5, but that was less of just picking a number and you know, the conditions of the day kind of dictate really what you're going to do. That's the fastest bike split that I've had, so I definitely am not disappointed by any stretch of the imagination by that bike. You know, and maybe it's just one of the facts that, you know, the last 20 or 30 miles, your power falls off and your speed falls off a little bit. But I think other than feeling weak on the last part of the bike, there was hard for me to critique much from my plan going in to the training that I had done to date to how the actual day unfolded.
Not many of us will know what it's like to be in the top 10 off the bike going into a marathon. What was your mindset knowing there's a few guys ahead of you, but you still have about three more hours of running to go?
Yes. So this is where my goal going to Louisville was to qualify for Kona. That was the goal. And you know, when I got off the bike, I had a pretty good idea that as long as nothing catastrophic happened, I'd accomplish that. So in one sense, I'm telling myself to relax and not do anything foolish. On the other sense, I'm seeing guys up the road and getting competitive and wanting to overtake them. So it was almost a good mix, because it allowed me to not overrun as soon as I got off the bike. You know, the first few miles are usually always the fastest for me, and then it usually settle into a more realistic pace. I did that a little bit, but I think the fear of, okay, well, the only thing that's really going to derail me from my overall goal of qualifying for Kona would be, you know, cramps or something catastrophic. So once I got through probably mile 6-7 and started to really start to feel solid, then I really focused on, okay, let's try and get to the front, because you know, crossing the line first would be pretty special.
Roger told me this before one of my last Ironmans, and it's a good rule of thumb, is that you want your first miles average to be within 20 seconds or so of your overall average on the day. And your first mile was 7 minutes. You averaged 6:48. So you were within 20 seconds of every different split they have on for you during the day. So you were very consistent and kept within yourself for the entire marathon.
Yeah, I would say that's the biggest thing that's come from experience of doing a couple, and not that I have a big wealth of Ironman experience to pull from, but the first Ironman I did, I definitely went out way harder than probably the classic rookie mistake. And even last year in Kona, I probably ran a little aggressive. So I think drawing from that experience and knowing that you've got 3+ hours out on the run course, there's plenty of time to make up time on competitors, and reminding yourself that, you know, the last half of the marathon, if you're executing a good race, is kind of a suffer fest for anyone. So, you know, it's kind of almost who can slow down the least, not who can speed up the fastest. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the reaction you've been getting from your friends and the community. I saw some newspaper articles talking about the Wisconsin guy who wins Ironman Louisville.
It's overwhelming, humbling, just incredible. My wife and I were joking, it's, you know, a little 15 minutes of fame. I actually got interviewed by the local news station here today, and my neighbors, when I came back, had dressed up the outside of our house with a bunch of Hawaii and Kona aloha gear. So it's definitely pretty festive and pretty lively here. I live in a great area and a great neighborhood, and I've got neighbors that are fantastic. People knew about it from work. I was getting all sorts of work emails of congratulations. So it's really, really been humbling. I mean, it's a pretty, as you know, thankless and selfish sport, and you sacrifice a lot to put the time and effort into, being ready to start the day. And, it's definitely, it's pretty special to get all the well wishes. It's actually been almost overwhelming. I've been having a hard time keeping up on the social media and the emails and the texts, but I wouldn't trade it for sure.
Now, when we talked at Comics Camp in Arizona earlier this year, Roger and I were talking about, man, who was this guy in Kona the year before who, maybe a 9-hour Ironman, at his second Ironman in Kona, and now you come with your third Ironman and you win a full distance. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to keep under the radar much longer at this pace. What does this tell you as an athlete and your potential being fairly new to the sport?
Yeah, I find that for me, one of the most enjoyable things is I continue to learn. So I've been, every race I've been getting a little bit more information and learning from what worked and what didn't work. And I'm still, working on nutrition, and I feel very much a newbie. And, I don't know how much faster I can go, and the different conditions are totally different. So, I got an idea of what I did in Hawaii last year, but, it wasn't nearly as warm as it was this year, and the winds and everything else. So I had a good block of training. And so I went into Louisville, fairly confident that I could execute a good race. And, that's really what it comes down to. And we've had, some life changes. We have a 3-month-old daughter now. So I've been having to, even change my daily routine or my training plan from the last few years to this year to work around other, commitments and things like that.
James, where do you want to take this new hobby of yours? You're still, quote, an amateur, a rookie on the Timex multi-sport team. What do you and your wife, what have you guys discussed about how far you want to take this?
I can tell you that being on the Timex team has probably made this year the most enjoyable of all the years. Being able to share, the experiences, both good and bad, seeing other Timex athletes at different races and catching up, and so it's been really special. I mean, I definitely probably went into last year thinking maybe this was going to be my last year, and now between being on the team and enjoying the process and the racing, I definitely want to continue to do them. I don't really have aspirations of turning pro. Mainly because I've got a great job and I've got, 3 wonderful kids and a wonderful wife who's very supportive. I really enjoy racing and getting out of the sport, what I've been putting into it. And, who knows, maybe it'll change. But, I'm also working against Father Time too. So, I probably got 3-4 more years of, really competitive racing before then. And it's all about the age group finishes.
So how are you going to celebrate your off season, or is there an off season for you?
Oh yeah, there's definitely an off season. So I actually went, so I stayed down in Louisville on Monday and went to work today, and it was really weird not having the pressures of trying to fit in a swim, bike, or run. I plan on, it gets pretty cold up here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I'll probably do some cyclocross races, not competitive, just fun, because it's just a fun thing to do. I can do a little cross-country skiing. I play some beer league hockey, and those are all my winter sports. And then I'll probably start getting back at it maybe February, March, when it starts to – when spring starts, but spring lasts pretty long here. So won't get really back at the major stuff until – probably, April, May, June.
All for a lead up to Kona, or would there be some sort of A, B races in between?
Yeah, I had a really good network of races all throughout the summer with USAT Age Group Nationals being here in town. And then I did ITU Worlds in Chicago, which was a great race. And then the year before I did Mont Tremblant 70.3 Worlds. So the last couple of years I've had some really good, drivable races that I was able to race on. So I haven't looked at, the schedule, but I would like to do at least a race a month, starting in June. I thought about maybe going south and trying to get a race in May, but, the tricky part, at least for me, is, once September rolls around, it starts getting cooler and starts getting darker here in Wisconsin, and it's pretty tough to motivate to try and train. So I found that the last time I went to Kona, I started training, doubles and really getting at it in January. And I was a little fried by the time October came around. So I want to ease into it a little bit more, come through a little fresher. I got a couple bucket races that I'd like to do. So I submitted the lottery for the Escape from Alcatraz. So I'd love to do that one. So if that works out, probably do that one. And then we'll have to figure something out around here.
2015 Ironman Louisville champion.
Pretty
James
surreal.
Burke. You the man.
Surreal.
Well, congratulations, James. Hope to see you next year at camp and have a good rest of the season. And congratulations on the new daughter.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dave. Good talking to you.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for episode 141, the reboot of the Endurance Hour podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. If you're coming back to us and you're like, wow, I'm so glad you guys are back, because I know you guys are saying that. And it was so funny. We were walking through Ironman Village in Coeur d'Alene back in June or July, it was, me and Roger, before we took on that race, which was a hellacious race. Remember, it was over 100 degrees that day. We both finished. I finished horribly, but I did finish. And we had stopped by a couple of people, and I think we mentioned this maybe, who said, love your show, or where's your show? Why don't you come back and do it? And these are people who just started talking to us. And, we're not necessarily always on camera, but one person, it was all based on our voice. Hey, love your show. Love listening to you guys. Keep it up. Or when are you going to have your next podcast? Well, for those of you listening and recognize our voices, and I've been approached simply because of my voice, they'll, hey, man, they look at my face. Are you Dave Erickson? There you go. Yes, I'm that's us. So thank you. The show is back on. We are going to build some momentum here. Moving into 2016, it's going to be fun. A lot of great information coming up, so stay tuned. Our next episode, 142, we'll talk about triathlon off-season, transition seasons. It'll make sense. Some track workouts with professional athlete Matt Russell, off-season training ideas, and then we'll do sports injuries and the aging athlete. That's a title. With Dr. Brian Mather. He's the owner of the Spokane Chiropractic and Sports Injury Clinic. That'll be on episode 142 coming up next week. Until then, for Roger Thompson, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week of training, racing, or whatever. Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Angel. Look at that sky. Life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.